So I invite you to take your Bibles and turn to Mark chapter 6. Our text is Mark 6, 45 to 52. It's page 1008 in the Pew Bible. Mark 6, 45. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went up on a mountainside to pray. Later that night, the boat was in the middle of the lake and he was alone on land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. Shortly before dawn, he went out to them walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost, and they cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." And then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down, and they were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. Brothers and sisters, this is the word of the Lord. Pastor Mark began his message this morning by saying that the passage from Mark chapter 5 was a familiar one to most Christians. And if that is the case this morning, then I think it's even more the case tonight. I did not grow up into a Christian home, but I went to vacation Bible schools, and it seemed like that we always heard stories from the Gospels, and one of those stories was probably Jesus walking on the water. I have very early recollections of hearing this story, and I'm sure that most of you, I think, probably grew up around the church, and you probably heard this story too. So it's a very familiar story. And when we think about this story, we tend to think about the miracle of Jesus strolling across water. And it is true that that miracle is something worth contemplating, worth thinking about. But I fear that by focusing only on the miracle, we might miss some very important details that Mark wants us to know about. Skeptics have focused on the miracle to their detriment. Many skeptics have come up with explanations for how Jesus could walk on the water. Some have even proposed that there was a sandbar that ran across the Sea of Galilee and that Jesus was walking across the top of that sandbar when the disciples saw him. Others propose that Jesus was actually walking along the shore. And the disciples mistakenly thought he was walking on the water due to some early morning fog, perhaps, or a haze in the air. Others say that the disciples were fearful of being on the water, especially at night. The first century person was aware of the fact that the sea was a dangerous place and that the sea had spirits, malevolent spirits, in it that would often work to bring about disaster or death in the course of sea travels. And so in their fear and in their anxiety and in their exhaustion after experiencing a full day of ministry, the disciples imagined that they saw a ghost. And then later on, as this miracle was recorded by the gospel writers, that ghost became Jesus himself. I suppose all of them are interesting explanations for the miracle, but again, I think they miss some more, to me anyway, more interesting and intriguing questions in the text, because Jesus does some things, like I said this morning, that we might consider to be a somewhat peculiar. For instance, Jesus appears to knowingly and intentionally placed the disciples in peril. The text tells us that Jesus told them to get into a boat after the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus told them, he compelled them, the text says, to get into the boat. He ordered them to get into the boat. The disciples really had no choice in the matter. This was their leader. This was their spiritual rabbi. And when he said, go, you go. But given the hour, given the fact that they had spent all day on the mountainside, given the fact that they were a long way from home, who would want to set out on a journey at this time of day across a lake? Perhaps they saw the storm clouds off in the horizon, and they knew what was awaiting them, and yet Jesus said, go! And I wonder, why did Jesus place them in a position of peril? Another question is, why did Jesus delay in going to them? Jesus, we are told, are on the mountainside praying, and he sees off in the distance that the disciples are rowing against a very violent wind, a destructive wind. And yet it's not to the early morning hours, some few hours later, that Jesus decides, hey, I'm going to take a stroll upon the water. Sounds peculiar that Jesus would delay, and I wonder why he chose to do so. And then the text tells us that Jesus is walking on the water and he's about to pass them by. Did you catch that? The text doesn't say that Jesus was walking out to them to join them in the boat, but Jesus was about to pass them by. A bit odd. Don't you think? I think if we focus so much on the miracle of Jesus walking on the water, we miss these intriguing questions that have a dramatic impact on how we live our lives and how we walk with faith. These situations asked us why God would allow his people to be placed in positions of peril and positions where they have nothing else to rely upon but faith in God himself. And I don't want us to miss the fact that these questions that are raised by this text have a significant impact on how we approach our day-to-day life with God. And so we're going to examine these three questions tonight. Are the three reasons why Jesus, or some of the reasons why Jesus behaved the way he did? And we'll need to do this by way of a flashback. Have you ever watched a TV show and the show comes on and it's in a particular place and particular events are happening? And they catch you by surprise, and you wonder, well, how in the world did so-and-so get in that position in the first place? And so then they say across the bottom of the screen, 3 hours earlier, or perhaps last week. Or in some instances, they even go back a few years or more. I think we need to do that because Mark has constructed these few chapters in his gospel in such a way that they lead us to make a flashback if we're going to satisfactorily answer the questions about who God is and how we are to live with him. And so the first flashback we take is immediately prior to getting into the boat and sending the disciples away. Jesus has just fed 5,000 men, not counting women and children. That in itself was a miracle. God took a very meager gift and made it into an abundance that could feed thousands. But the 12 did not understand. Mark tells us in our text that their hearts were hardened. They did not understand the message of the loaves. And neither did the people, because the people probably wanted to declare that Jesus was their king. The people at this point in Jesus' ministry were starting to understand that there was something different about this itinerant rabbi from Nazareth who lived in Capernaum. There was something different about this man. Perhaps he was the one to lead them in liberation from Roman bondage and Roman oppression. Perhaps they were in a position to make him king, but it was not yet Jesus' time. He had so much more to do, and so much more awaited him in his future. So he was not yet ready to be crowned king, and he summarily dismissed the crowd. He sent them on their way, and then he sent the disciples away. Unusual. Completely contrary to what we would think a leader who's gathering the masses to himself would do in these circumstances. It reminds us that the kingdom is something completely different from what we expect. It's completely different from what we think the kingdom might look like. The kingdom challenges us to look at things differently and to see what God intends for the world. We want to keep ourselves isolated, but the kingdom says, no, open yourselves up. The kingdom wants to exclude, we want to exclude others, and the kingdom says, no, welcome everyone. The kingdom is a kingdom of grace, but we tend to want to make it a kingdom of merit. The kingdom is completely contrary to what we envision it and what we tend to think it is. And so Jesus acts in peculiar ways. The kingdom is a blessing, yes, but the kingdom can also be perilous, as it was for those 12 disciples crossing the Sea of Galilee late at night in a very small boat. You would think that the disciples would be fully aware of the fact that Jesus is going to do the unexpected. Jesus is going to do what we don't expect him to do. He is going to surprise us more often than not. And that's what Jesus is doing here. He's putting them in perilous places, in a perilous position, with the intention of revealing something grand and glorious about himself. And so we continue to look backward in our flashback. And we come to the next flashback, and the flashback here contains three scenes. First, Jesus has crossed the lake. These three chapters in the book of Gospel are in the book of Mark reads like a travelogue. Jesus is going back and forth and back and forth across the lake, and he's going into places where we ordinarily wouldn't expect him to go, and he's encountering people that we ordinarily would not expect a Jewish rabbi to encounter, and he's doing things that perhaps might raise some controversy or some eyebrows among the various leaders and the common people who were following him. And yet we find Jesus again crossing the lake, and when he stepped up onto the shore, he encountered a man. Not an ordinary man, though. A man possessed by many demons. And these demons recognized Jesus. What do you want with us, Jesus? And they were fearful that Jesus had, in fact, come to destroy them, to send them to the abyss. And instead, Jesus does something different. But they acknowledge his power. They understand that there is something unique about this Jesus. And then he gets back in the boat and he crosses the lake again. And there, when he encounters the shore, when he steps upon the shore, he encounters the leader of a synagogue whose son is dying. And this is the passage that Pastor Mark spoke about this morning. So I won't go into much detail about it other than to say that the synagogue leader has a son who is dying, and Jesus decides to go with him to heal the son, and while they're walking there, what happens? A woman on her hands and knees, who is unclean, who has been bleeding a very long time, crawls through the crowd, through the mass, so that she can reach out and touch the hem of Jesus, knowing that she will be healed. And then Jesus, in spite of all that crowd, asks the absurd question, "Who touched me?" And Peter, more than happy to answer an absurd question, says, "Lord, that's an absurd question." We find Jesus doing the absurd, the peculiar, the odd. All of these people, this demon-possessed man, this woman who was bleeding, this man whose daughter was ill and who died but then was raised to new life, they all demonstrate to us that our God is a God who does the unexpected, who will go to unacceptable places, who will respond to acts of faith regardless of from whom they come. The demons understood and acknowledged who Jesus was. He was the ruler of the universe. The synagogue ruler and the woman had faith to believe that Jesus was powerful enough to heal and to ultimately give life, and he was. Notice that in all of this, Jesus is willing to allow himself to be sidetracked. We often hear in management books and leadership books that a leader is sternly set on a goal in front of him, and I suppose that is true. Successful men and women have a goal, have an objective in front of them. But that doesn't mean that they're not willing to be sidetracked to take care of the people that they encounter. And that's what Jesus does. He allows himself to be sidetracked. In the grand scheme of things, faith in God requires that we trust his timing. That like God himself, we must exert patience as the will of God mysteriously and miraculously works its way out in our lives in ways that we do not expect, in ways that we may not fathom, in ways perhaps that we may not even like. But nevertheless, God is true and faithful. It sometimes seems that God appears to place us in positions of peril, spiritually, if not physically. I mean, we can have physical danger, but our faith can also be endangered because we find God to be long in answering our prayers, or we wonder why God is consistently disappointing us when we ask for things. So our spiritual life may be in peril because we do not understand God's purposes. We do not understand that by delaying his action, God is really serving to further his will and his kingdom and the work of that kingdom. And so we have God commanding the disciples to get into a boat and go on a perilous journey. We have Jesus on the side of the hill seeing that the disciples are straining against a violent, oppressive wind, and he delays in going out to meet them on their perilous journey. And then we find that Jesus is about to pass them by in the boat. Most scholars see in the book of Mark that Jesus is presented as something of a new Moses. We find a lot of parallels between the events surrounding Moses' life and those recorded in the Gospel of Mark. And just as Moses was to go to Egypt and through the power of the Spirit liberate the Israelites from Egyptian bondage and lead them on a journey to the Promised Land, so we see Jesus leading his disciples. Just as Jesus had Moses stand before the Red Sea and raise his staff and command the waters to go back, so that the Israelites might walk forth on dry land, we see Jesus walking across the Sea of Galilee as if there was no water there at all. And so we see parallels between Jesus and Moses. But this still doesn't answer our question about why Jesus was about to pass them by. In many ways, this is the question that I am most obsessed by in this text. It's one thing to place your friends, to place your family, to place those men that have been with you now for probably a year or more in a position of peril. And it's another thing entirely to see them in a position of peril and danger and pass by them. You want to know what I think? I think Jesus was showing them the way. I think in the midst of a violent windstorm on a dark and cold night, on a sea that has been disrupted by all kinds of violent winds and waves, Jesus is showing them the way. He's showing them the way home. But because they did not have faith, because their hearts were hardened, the text says to us, they had not the faith to see. And so they cried out in fear. Not so much at a ghost as at their situation, I think. And Jesus, in the midst of that, says, "It is I. It's me. Don't be afraid." And as we wrap this up, we need to make one more flashback to Mark chapter 4. And in Mark chapter 4, Jesus has embarked upon the first of his journeys. Remember, I said that Mark 4, 5, and 6 are something of a travelogue. We have Jesus traveling back and forth across the Sea of Galilee. That all starts in chapter 4. And so they're making the 7 or 8 mile journey across the Sea of Galilee, and apparently they are in the middle of the sea, and a violent storm strikes. And Jesus is in the front of the boat, asleep. Now think a minute. Was Jesus in the front of a boat like we see on Lake Michigan? You know, if we go down to Holland or Grand Haven and we watch the boats journey out into Lake Michigan, I'm amazed at some of the beauty of the boats, some of the size of the boats. I mean, they are awesome. And how in the world does science and engineer keep something like that afloat, much less something like an aircraft carrier or whatever? But I tend to think that when we think of boats, we think about something like that. Jesus wasn't on something like that, friends. He was on something a little bigger than your standard rowboat. And it was raining and it was storming and the waves were blowing over him, and he's sound asleep in the front of the boat. And the disciples go to him and they have to wake him up. Talk about your sound sleepers. They have to wake him up and they say, "Lord, do you not care that we're going to perish?" And Jesus stands up and he says, "Be still." And the waves calm down. They settle down. And the disciples ask a very poignant question. They said, "Who is this that can calm even the wind and the rain?" And that question, "Who is this?" Mark answers again a few chapters later when on a turbulent sea of Galilee, Jesus says, "I am." He says, "I am God." And all of the events preceding that have led up to the explanation that Jesus is God. He walks on water. He defies the laws of physics and nature. He takes what is meager and he makes it an abundance. He feeds the thousand. He takes the sick and he heals them. What doctors cannot do, God in Jesus can. He raises the dead. And only God can do that. And so the question that the disciples began with in Mark chapter 4, who is this? And the question that perhaps you and I ask so many times in our spiritual life, who is this? Is this a God that I can trust? Is this a God I can believe in? Is this a God in whom I can place my faith? Who is this? To that question, Jesus says, I am. And with that simple affirmation comes all the explanation faith really needs. Sometimes we need to hear, in the midst of our trials, in the midst of our travels on turbulent waters, in the midst of our perilous journeys, sometimes we simply have to have faith and trust in the fact that Jesus is God. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.